When you have health insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. But are your bills accurate? Well, it's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. HealthLock can help you. HealthLock technology securely connects with your insurance and flags any overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save over $130 million. So to save, visit HealthLock.com today. That's HealthLock.com today.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been another busy news week, and we like to review the major stories of the week here on the Black Information Network. Today, we are joined by Black Information Network news anchors Mike Island and Nicole Deal to discuss this week's major stories. This is the Black Information Network Daily Podcast, and I'm your host, Ramses Jha. All right, Mr. Mike Island, how have you been, sir? Welcome back to the show.
Not bad at all. Good to be with you as always. It's only been a couple weeks this time. I came back fast because I wanted to be back with you.
Yeah, and I know there's another couple of reasons, but we won't get into that right now. Before we get there, let's talk to Nicole. How have you been, Nicole Deal?
I am doing excellent. Happy to be here, as always, to join you people with your exceptional talents. So
you're very kind. Well, Nicole, let's have a conversation. So earlier this week, President Biden and former President Donald Trump secured the necessary delegates to become the nominees for their respective parties and punch their tickets to a history-making rematch in the upcoming 2024 presidential election. So let's get things started with you. Tell us more about this story and your reaction to Biden's State of the Union address. And then, of course, Mike, we'll come to you for your thoughts afterwards.
Sure. This is a moment in U.S. history that most of us saw coming, right? Mm-hmm. We live in a democracy, which means we get to vote on just about everything, or at least we're supposed to. So on the Democratic side, President Biden did not have much opposition. He needed a minimum of 1,968 delegates to win. So he ended up with 2,107. On the Republican side, Donald Trump needed a minimum of 1,215 delegates to win and ended up with 1,249. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to note that former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley gave Trump a little bit of heartburn along the way. Mm-hmm. Not a lot, but just a little bit. But she dropped out about a week after her presidential primary wins in Vermont and Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. After their respective wins, Trump and Biden each made a statement. And I want to share with you a little piece of what each of them had to say.
Okay.
Biden says, despite the challenges we faced when I took office, we're in the middle of a comeback. Wages are rising faster than inflation. Jobs are coming back. Consumer confidence has soared. Amid this progress, we face a sobering reality. Freedom and democracy are at risk here at home, running a campaign of resentment, revenge, and retribution that threatens the very idea of America. Mm-hmm. They're just kind of gunning for each other. Here's a little bit of what Trump had to say. It is my great honor to be representing the Republican Party as its presidential nominee. Our party is united and strong and fully understands that we are running against the worst, most incompetent, corrupt, and destructive president in the history of the United States. So again, you know, they're both just kind of gloves off there, you know, while they're taking their victory lap. And of course, our listeners can form their own opinions about those comments. As for Biden's State of the Union speech, I think he did a solid job. He hit all the high points. He talked about inflation and the economy. He talked about jobs, student loans, making it easier for people to buy homes, healthcare, lowering the cost of prescription drugs, which he has done. He also talked about lowering taxes for working families, et cetera, et cetera. excuse me. The one issue that I would have liked to see him hit a lot harder is illegal immigration. He did go there a little bit, but I think both he and his predecessor have misgoverned in this area. And I think it's a very important issue. We have to secure our borders. We simply just cannot have thousands of people flooding into our country every day unvetted. We just can't. Solutions, and we need to pass legislation that aligns with the interest of putting Americans first. Not that we're insensitive, not that we're not considering others, not that we're not humanitarians, but we still have to put Americans first. This is America. So as we lead up to the 2024 presidential election, President Biden absolutely must just find a new gear and a new resolve to combat illegal immigration. And then also throwing the hot potato to VP Kamala Harris on the issue is not the proper solution either.
Mm. Okay, Mike, let's get your thoughts on it.
Well, we're into the fight that nobody wanted, even on both sides, you know, Biden versus Trump. Nicole's on point where she said that he's in gear. He was on high on the State of the Union address. He was running on all cylinders, and that's been noted. But he handled the disrespect pretty good. The heckling that was going on, you know, it sounded like it was comedy night at the Laughs a Minute Club with hecklers out there. It was but instead it was a high level talk about our lives in this country. His opposition has put the State of the Union address and other high-level discussions basically made him a WWF wrestling match. You know, I'm more concerned about the decorum of this election more so than anything else. I believe that Biden will find his groove in getting the immigration situation resolved. I have full trust in that. It's just been slow, a slow process, a lot of rhetoric, but it's a very slow process, you know, as far as actual instituting something that the American people can understand that this thing is going to be stopped. This flow, this influx can be controlled. Doesn't have to necessarily be stopped, but at least under control. But right now it's way out of whack, and we just have to respect the process.
Sure.
You know, of an American president trying to do his best. I think he'll get there. But this that's not what we're going to hear these next few months. We're just going to hear a little bit of back and forth. Maybe Biden can cut through it. But Trump is, you know, he's going to be hurling insults and entertaining his base all the way to the White House. So I think that's all we're going to hear. We're going to hear little policy talk. Little discussion, meaningful discussion about immigration. What is actually going to happen? We only hear that we need to get this immigration policy. We got to get together on both sides and get this immigration situation resolved. And it kind of stops there.
Yeah.
So that's where we need to go. We need to actually meaningful implementation of an immigration process.
Sure. You know, it's this comes to mind. Okay. Republicans, Democrats, okay? We have to work together to get anything done, really. We need to be on the same side of an agenda. And I liken it to, okay, the Republicans are coming to paint a house, and they are bringing the paint. And the Democrats are coming to paint a house, and they are bringing the brushes. Okay. And if the Democrats say, okay, I got the brushes, go ahead and give me the paint. We'll get started painting the house. And then Donald Trump says to the Republicans, don't give them the paint so that I can say the Democrats are not painting the house. Elect me because I'll get the house painted. It just effectively kicks the can down the road. And in the meantime, the American population suffers. And I think that that illuminates the degree of control that Donald Trump has over the Republican Party, because this was true prior to him securing their nomination for president this time around. They did have a border bill on the table, a bipartisan effort as well, that did not get passed because Trump at the last second tanked it so that he could run on a weak border platform and stick that on Joe Biden, because fear sells. We've seen that in Donald Trump's playbook since the beginning. If he can make the American population become afraid that there is a there's a crisis, a replacement crisis indeed, at the border, and that these people are coming in consuming all the resources, which I won't say is entirely untrue, but certainly not to the degree that they are making it seem, that these migrants are going to come through and murder everyone in the United States and vote and replace all white people, you know, because this is really the platform that Donald Trump wants to run on, because this is what his base causes his base to move, fear. Okay, so without that, by allowing Biden and the Democrats to secure our borders, it weakens Donald Trump's personal chances at reclaiming the White House, given his strategy. And that feels a little bit unfair to America, the United States of America, because again, this one man wants to reclaim the White House, and he's willing to tank a border deal that, as Nicole mentioned, we do need in order to get back there. As far as Biden's State of the Union address, you know, credit where it's due. He came out swinging. He needed to show people that he was not cognitively on the decline. He needed to show people that he was still strong. He was still a capable leader and capable of motivating the American population. And so I respect, you know, him coming out doing that. Obviously, he spoke to pretty much every major issue that, you know, people are picking him apart about. I admittedly have been a lot more critical of his administration since the handling of the war, the Israel-Hamas war. I don't like that one bit. I still don't like it. I think that he can do more to stand with the human beings on the ground in Palestine. But for his purposes, what he needed to do, he came out and said what he needed to say. You know, might have been speaking out of both sides of his mouth, but the fact that he spoke at all shows that he's willing to engage, and that's not nothing. I think, Mike, you mentioned this, that there really is a rematch here that nobody wanted to see.
You got that right.
We're just not excited about this, but this is what we got, and we got to keep going. There are people who will vote because they don't like Biden or like Trump, you know, and or there are people that vote because they don't like Biden, and there will be people who vote because they don't like Trump. And that is the nature of this election feels certainly different from the last election I was really excited to vote in, which was when Obama was elected in 2008. And then, of course, the rematch in 2012. And so I know that there are some people on Trump's side of the equation who are excited to vote for him again. But I suspect that a lot of the enthusiasm has eroded. Certainly a lot of the numbers would indicate that the enthusiasm has eroded. I mean, there's still people who are going to vote for him, and he still definitely has that base. But again, I think you said it best. This is a rematch that nobody really wanted. So no surprises here that they secured the delegates needed to get the nominations for their parties. But it's onward from here. And as you mentioned, as you both mentioned, it's probably going to be a lot of mudslinging until we figure out who's going to sit in the White House next. So moving on. In Pittsburgh, a hospital worker found himself suddenly unemployed after reporting an incident of possible racist behavior. Mike, I know that you and I talked a bit about this. I asked you to pump the brakes so we could talk about it when we're recording. So let's start with you. And then, of course, Nicole, we'll get your thoughts afterward.
I'm cooled down a little bit now.
Okay.
Let's give them the story. It comes from the Kansas City Star. And the thing that's not surprising is that someone spoke up about racism and got fired. Mm-hmm. That part of the story is no surprise.
Yeah.
What got me was that this is at UMPC Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh, a children's hospital where a series of events started actually a year ago, spring, first day of spring in 2023. Caleb Ferguson, he works in the transport unit at the hospital. He was working there and he came across one of his coworkers, a white woman in her late 50s to early 60s. And she knitted a lot at work. She did knitting things, which is a nice thing. But one of the coworkers asked her what she was making. And she says, I'm making a monkey. And then she holds it up and said, look, it's Caleb, referring to Caleb Ferguson. And of course, he was stunned by that. And but the other coworkers, no one spoke up for him. So this was a thing he was on his own to make this claim to his employer that something just happened here that is really wrong. You know, a disgusting racial slur, I think it was described as a well-known racial slur, that slur that was uttered in that particular moment. But the problem here is that it's a children's hospital and you wonder, these are all workers there. They're all coming in that building. It just makes me go to a broader level talking about the healthcare of people. Now, if these people have that attitude and they're working, they do a lot of the pre-medical ops before someone goes into surgery or a child goes into another procedure. These are people have those attitudes. I'm just worried about the black children that come into that hospital for treatment. And whether this kind of attitude contributes to the racial disparities in healthcare. So it's bigger than someone making a monkey.
Yeah.
The real issue here is the mental state of the people who are in a hospital charged with giving medical care equally to all patients. If they harbor these attitudes, I'm wondering what happens to the quality of the healthcare of the children and people that come into the hospital. That's bigger than this particular story. What happened here happens all over in different ways. This was, you know, a knitting, you know, not everyone knits, you know, at every job. There are other racial, you know, things that happen at many jobs. But this is bigger than that because it took place in a children's hospital, in a medical facility.
Sure.
And that's the bigger story to me.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're absolutely right. Nicole, let's get your thoughts here.
Absolutely. Great perspective, Michael. I love that. My response to this story is a lot more petty than Michael's.
Let's get it. Let's go.
This story right here takes me off of my A game a little bit.
All right.
Why are you messing with me at work, Karen? It makes me kind of want to throw hands with you, Karen. Mm. And now I've lost my job behind this foolishness, Karen. This is completely unacceptable on every level. And y'all know when I get to clapping, I'm excited.
Oui.
Listen, if I brought a doll to work and dressed it up in KKK garb, that in and of itself would be offensive to a lot of people, black and white. Mm. Okay? Strike one. But then if I got the bright idea and the audacity to name my improperly dressed KKK doll after one of my white cohorts in the office, that would make my actions disrespectful and vicious and triggering. Strike two. Mm-hmm. But after all of that, if I then decided to name my KKK doll Karen, and refer to the doll in front of Karen and other employees, oh my goodness, strike three. Employers need to take kinds of racist acts and deal with them harshly and swiftly and make these people accountable. You have to discipline people for these types of actions. They cannot go unchecked. And that's strike three, Karen. You're out of there. She should have been reprimanded with a paper trail and possibly fired. I don't know for certain that his firing was retaliatory, but I mean, let's just call it what it is and say the timing of it is suspect. Okay. Yeah. I think his lawsuit absolutely has merit. I believe he is entitled to just compensation. And I also have a public service announcement to people who are not Black and brown. And that message is, please stop.
Yeah.
Please stop doing this type of foolishness at work, on social media. Stop painting your face black, all that. Just stop. And to Caleb Ferguson, I wish him the best.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. People don't always realize just how much their negative thoughts and experiences stick with them and weigh them down. You may find your brain constantly running through a highlight reel of bad moments. That comment your friend made last week that hurt your feelings, that frustrating thing your mom does, or that silly thing you said in a meeting. Maybe it's time to get it all off your chest. Whether it's a tiny annoyance or something much bigger, talking about it can give you some relief and lead you to a potential solution. That's where therapy comes in. It's a safe space to share whatever's weighing you down and learn to process it so your internal highlight reel can focus on the good stuff. And BetterHelp offers affordable online therapy on a schedule that works for you. Connect with a licensed therapist by text, phone, or video call. Start the process in minutes and switch therapist anytime. Let it out with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BIN today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BIN.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
I'm Ilya Kani, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
With his lawsuit.
Black Information Network news anchors Mike Island and Nicole Deal are here with us discussing this week's major stories. All right, our next story comes to us from North Carolina, where one Black woman apparently received some interesting feedback on why she didn't get a job promotion. Nicole, why don't you go ahead and tackle this one for us, and then Mike, we're going to hear from you next.
Alrighty then. So this happened to a woman by the name of Chantel Adams. She is a senior marketing executive. And this one really hit home for me, you know, as a Black woman. So if I tell you that there's a job opening at your company where you've put in years of service, you're well respected, you have consistently taken on extra responsibilities, you've proven yourself, et cetera, you might see yourself as a good candidate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a master's degree in business administration, like Chantel Adams, you might see yourself as an even better candidate. But unfortunately, what happened to Chantel, reportedly, allegedly, is happening to other men and women across the country. They are being overlooked for jobs and promotions in what she believes is based on their race. Chantel says that she was turned down for a promotion with her boss, telling her she was too articulate and sharp and that it was intimidating to some people. Just let that sink in for a moment.
Oh, it's been sinking.
Right. It's like, all right, so I would think that those would be the same reasons and rationale that you would use to bring me on board and hire me. And maybe that's why you did hire me. But now that I'm here and I've proven myself and I've worked for you, and now someone else sees me as a threat because I am smart and I am articulate and whatever. Now I can't get promoted. What a slap in the face.
Yeah.
Her remedy for that has just been to move onward and upward and seek employment somewhere else. But even by doing so, you know, when you change employers, you have to transfer your 401k. You might have to change locations. You might have to move, change residences. You know, you might have to change banks and all those types of things. And it interrupts your direct deposit. And so all of those things kind of go along with this as the windfall of that. But this is what you're up against, unfortunately, or what she was up against as a Black woman. I mean, you have a decision to make, because if you hit that glass ceiling in your office, where do you go from there? When your own boss, the person that you need to look to give you those promotions or to give you a promotion that you've earned, let me say it that way, is really betraying you in that circumstance. And also, I want to share a personal story. I went on an interview many years ago, and a person that does not look like me raved over my resume. She told me how qualified I was. She even told me that I was overqualified. And she says to me, she looks me right in the face and she goes, you know what? She puts her pen down and she goes, can I just be honest with you? And I said, sure, of course. And she goes, you're overqualified for this position that you're applying for. And if I hired you, I'd be afraid that in a year or so that you would take my job. She literally said that to me in the interview. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, whoa. And then I found myself in that seat saying, oh, no, you know, no, I wouldn't do that. I'm not trying to, you know, I'm just here for the job that I'm applying for, you know, and I walked out the door. Of course, I didn't get the job. Right. But I walked out the door and I thought, oh, my gosh, what a travesty. And in that instance, it didn't matter what color I was, but it was the threat of someone who she saw as articulate or professional or whatever. And she's already, you know, moved us a year down the road and said, no, I can't hire you because you're a threat to me. And I'm like, this is really silly. But anyway, in the case of Chantel Adams, I felt sorry for her when I read this article, but I also felt empowered by her strength to just say, you know what? You're not going to hold me down. You know, I know why the caged bird sings and I'm out.
All right, Mike, let's get you to weigh in here.
Oh, wow. I got to follow that.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Nicole, you know, yeah, it shows the tenor of things today, because when I was growing up, I was told that the more articulate you are, the better chances of you getting a job. And so now that's a threat. But the thing is, I think there's a comfort zone among people not of color in management positions of I wish I was on camera here where I'm holding my hand up high. They're here and you're here. My hand is now lower. That's where the comfort zone is. If you get too close to where they are, you are a threat. You're okay as long as you're just okay as an employee. But if you, you know, that articulation and that smartness and all that, that is a threat. A person of color is a threat if you're too good. And that, like you said, Nicole, a slap in the face, because, you know, the way I grew up, you had to be those things to make it. And for a while, that was acceptable. But now, with the tenor of the country having changed with anti-DEI going on right now, I think there's a push the other way. You can't be too smart. You have to be on a level where it's you're seen as comfortable, you know, like in your place, I guess, you know, in your lane, I guess, so to speak. But that's the nature of that story, Nicole. It's crazy. You're very articulate. You know, you sound great on the air. And
on the air.
Yeah, you sound great on the air, you know. But I love your conversational tone. But the thing is, with a voice like yours, you probably fool a lot of people when they see you in person if they only hear your voice at first. And that's the same with me. And so I've run into similar things. Because you listen to my voice, you can't really tell that I may be a person of color because that dialect, that ethnicity is just not there in most cases, especially when I'm doing a newscast or doing a radio presentation. So when you're seen in person for the first time, it's like, oh, like, why didn't you tell me on the phone? You know, that type of thing. So it's crazy right now. It's I'm at a loss for words up to a certain point, and I've reached that point. So I'll leave it there.
Yeah. Yeah. Last thing before I let you two go. It appears that former CNN host Don Lemon's latest project has been canceled by someone who has a history of pushing back against Black culture. Mike, why don't you tell us more about the cancellation of Don Lemon's project? And then Nicole will come to you to close us out.
Just makes me wonder, did X hire a Lemon? But you know, they did. But it was Don Lemon, a very cool gentleman and a very smart one, too. But he has put the he really pushed taken the pedal to the metal. Okay. With, you know, his views on things. And I think that may have been a little too strong for Elon Musk, although at the outset, after he was released, after Lemon was released from CNN, Musk welcomed the freedom of speech. But apparently it was a little bit too much freedom, and he pulled the plug kind of at the last minute. It sounded like there was full support for Lemon. And then this thing was going to happen on March 18th, not long from now, and it's not going to happen. I think we will see the interview, I think, on other platforms. I believe YouTube or something eventually. Yeah. But right now, that unique and honest voice that, you know, Elon Musk talked about Lemon, he just really praised this guy, sung the guy's praises. And apparently either someone must have elbowed Elon Musk, or maybe he just had a change of heart as a result of this interview. Now, this would be better discussed if we actually heard the interview. We could probably get a better perspective on why that Musk may have changed his mind. Until we hear that, we won't really know. But we can only speculate that maybe his tense interview that was described as tense at times, but Elon Musk said, I thought it was good for people to see and hear our exchange and that they will learn from our conversation. But, you know, it's not happening. So I think it was Lemon that said apparently free speech doesn't apply when it comes to questions about him from people like me.
Yeah.
So I think that it hit a little too close to home, some of the questions. And if you know Don Lemon's style, that could have been very intense. Sure. So we have to wait to hear it. And I think our views on that will probably explain more about why he's canceled before he got started.
All right, Nicole, let's get your thoughts.
Sure. It's like the previous story. You know, I have praise for you. You're great. You're fantastic. You're a great journalist until you come for me in any way. I don't really have a lot to say about this one because we don't have the perspective of Lemon's interview with Elon Musk. And we won't have that until, like Mike already said, I believe it's scheduled to air on Monday, March 18th. But apparently the phrase, you know, free speech absolutism is on both of their minds. Mm-hmm. But to what degree and what topics? To me, it almost seems like there's a bit of sarcasm and lemons online. I mean, you know, maybe I'm just, this is subjective. Maybe I'm reading into this, but it almost seems like a little bit of sarcasm in Lemon's online post. And my interpretation moves me toward the word hypocrite. But again, I think Musk ending the partnership after his interview, but before the podcast, is oddly coincidental. Makes me wonder what the financial implications are, if any, for Lemon by him doing that. So, you know, we just won't know. It's kind of a wait and see. Maybe there were some hard questions being asked and some squirmy moments. But again, we just won't know until the interview it goes to air.
Well, there was a couple of things that happened that kind of give a little bit of insight. I think you're both right. We're going to have to wait and see the full interview. But funnily enough, Don Lemon went back to CNN to report on the interview that he did, right? So on CNN, he aired a couple of clips from the interview. One clip where he was kind of pressing Elon Musk about the increase in hate speech on the X platform since Musk's takeover, and how he felt about that, and then how Musk himself had been pushing the great replacement theory, and how problematic that was. And you could see Elon Musk kind of pushing back, being a little bit more agitated in his response. You could hear it in his voice and see it in his face that he was uncomfortable being asked about that. And Musk was like, you know, I just don't care. You know, we invited you here because, you know, we thought that this would be good. And that's why you're here. And, you know, but, you know, and just kind of trying to little bro him a little bit. But Don Lemon wasn't really, you know, he's not really on that because he's a titan in his own right. And then he asked him about it was a drug, like a prescribed drug, but I'm not a drug guy, so I don't know the name of it. But he was like talking about this use of this prescribed drug and just some other things that made Musk uncomfortable. But again, these are things that Musk himself posted on the platform. I think to your point that, Don Lemon seems like he has kind of a jovial attitude about, you know, the partnership coming undone. And you can hear that in his voice. In fact, you know, we have a clip here, so I'll share it with you before we close out.
Hi, everyone. Elon Musk is mad at me. And I just put out a statement about what happened between him, me, and the interview that he is apparently so upset about. But make no mistake about this. This is going to be my first episode of the Don Lemon Show this coming Monday, March 18th. So make sure you tune in. This does not change anything about the show except for my relationship with Elon and X. And there's a whole lot that went down, and I'm going to tell you about in the coming days. I know, though, that many of you were not happy that I was doing this in the first place, and you told me so. I just want you to know that I did this deal because not only do I believe in free speech, but I believed that this was the best possible chance for the work that I'm doing to reach the largest amount of people. So speaking of free speech, right, I thought the first person interviewed, no-brainer, Elon Musk, the man who calls himself a free speech absolutist. I asked him to do it. He willingly agreed to the interview. Throughout our conversation, I kept reiterating to him that although it was tense at times, I thought it was good for people to see and hear our exchange and that they would learn from our conversation, learn more about him, learn more about me. But apparently, free speech absolutism doesn't apply when it comes to questions about him from people like me. What did we talk about? Why is he so upset? Does he even have a reason to be upset? Make sure you watch it on Monday on YouTube and everywhere you listen to podcasts, and you can decide for yourself. You can even watch it on X because I'm still going to post it there, and I'm sure others will as well.
So again, from the horse's mouth right there, Monday we'll know more. But until then, we're just going to have to hold on. So we'll leave it right there. Thank you both very much, as always, for your insight into these stories and your perspective. Once again, today's guests are Black Information Network news anchors Mike Island and Nicole Deal. This has been a production of the Black Information Network. Today's show was produced by Chris Thompson. Have some thoughts you'd like to share? Use the red microphone talkback feature on the iHeartRadio app. While you're there, be sure to hit subscribe and download all of our episodes. I am your host, Ramses Ja, on all social media, and I'll be hosting another episode of Civic Sector this weekend on a station near you. For stations, show times, and podcast info, check civiccipher.com. And join us Monday as we share our news with our voice from our perspective, right here on the Black Information Network Daily Podcast.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right. That's right.